This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Yeah, it's hard to get around in a 6-foot town.
Welcome in, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. It is a Thursday, and we are glad to have you with us. I'm Caleb Colquitt. You are listening to Tactics Radio on News Radio 1440's Facebook Live. We encourage you to like and share if you do appreciate what you see. If you don't, leave a snarky comment. You know, we're fine with that too. But either way, we are glad you're watching, even if you disagree. So that being said, we're going to dive headfirst into the news. There is an Alabama native, and as always, local news takes priority. There is an Alabama native that has been threatened with eviction over guns that she owns legally. So these are not guns that she stole. These are not guns that she doesn't have the proper documentation for. These are firearms that she owns legally and is storing legally. And yet she is being threatened with an eviction. Her name is Layla Pierney, I believe is the way to pronounce her last name. It looks French, so I hope I'm getting that one right. But Layla Pierney is a graduate student at Harvard University. So it's not exactly like, not that this would matter. It's not exactly this is a girl from the rough side of town or anything like that. I mean, this is a woman who is a graduate student at an Ivy League school. So obviously somebody that's very smart. If you've seen any of the interviews or any of the pictures of her, a very clean cut, very attractive young woman. So not somebody that you would think is, you know, hanging on to guns because she's secretly a heroin dealer or anything like that. There's really not a lot of implication here. So this is somebody that you can very clearly see, at least looking at all the circumstances surrounding her, the kind of school that she was able to get into, because it's hard to get into Harvard even for an undergraduate degree, but much less a graduate degree. Obviously somebody that's very intelligent, well-educated, and based on all of the details of this story, very good at keeping her guns and doing so in a legally prescribed way. So this is a quote from Pierney about the whole situation. She said, "A few weeks ago, I came back to my apartment from a weekend trip and was confronted by one of my roommates who asked if I had guns in the house. After being told far too many lies to count, my roommates finally admitted that they searched my closet, under my bed, and all of my drawers in pursuit of finding my guns." All right, so this bothers me on a number of levels. Being a very private person, especially, my initial reaction to this is, why not just be an adult about it and ask the person if they have a gun? I don't understand the need for all this cloak and dagger nonsense to where when somebody leaves for a weekend trip, you go into their room and go through all their private things to determine whether or not they have a gun or not. Because I know very few gun owners that would lie about something like that. If you want to confront somebody, just confront them. I've had people that ask me before. It's rare because I can still carry, so most people would never even think to ask if I have a firearm on me. But I have never once lied to somebody about owning or having a firearm on me at any time. Now, that's partially because my religion teaches that lying is wrong, and so because of that, I don't do it. But nonetheless, I don't see any reason why if any of my roommates, and I've had quite a few roommates over the years, especially when I was in college, had come up to me and just said, "Hey, you have guns here?" I would have said, "Yeah." Of course, with me, they probably would have known it long before then because I like to talk about my guns too. But nonetheless, I've yet to meet a gun owner that would deceive somebody like that. And there are a lot of us, partially because there's a stigma, but mostly because it's a mundane thing to us. We wouldn't think to take somebody aside and go, "Just so you know, I have guns," because to us, it's just not a big deal. Doesn't really matter. It's not like she was lying to these girls and telling them that she wasn't armed and didn't have guns. She just happened to have guns in her room that never came up in conversation and she didn't mention. And so it's absolutely ridiculous that they started going through her room and searching through her things trying to find these guns. I don't understand. You can already tell just based on this that these girls are probably snowflakes that don't have a lot of intestinal fortitude or gumption, because they're so terrified to engage in some kind of conflict that they decided it was the better course of action to go behind somebody's back and rummage through their things trying to find out some information that they could have found out in 10 seconds if they just asked the person. So nonetheless, this is what's going on here. These girls clearly cannot be an adult about this, and I would assume that these are other graduate students or at least older college students, not necessarily somebody fresh out of high school, so they really need to learn how to grow up. But nonetheless, why did they go through a room? What spurred this on? Because this girl has been living here since September. What was the trigger, pun intended, that led them to believe that she might have guns? Because they already knew she was from Alabama. So that alone in and of itself was not enough to tip them off that she might be a gun owner. Apparently, the thing that terrified them was that they saw that she owned a MAGA hat. Now, I'm not a huge fan of the slogan, Make America Great Again. I think that there's some flaws in it, because I think that we were always great and we never really stopped being great. But nonetheless, I'm not going to rehash that. If you want, you can go look at my old monologues on that slogan. And you guys know that I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool Trump supporter. There's things I like about him, there's things I don't. But the idea that any kind of political speech would merit you assuming something about them, to me, doesn't really make a lot of sense. But even if you made that assumption, it certainly doesn't justify going through their things and being afraid of them. So, at her roommate's request, now because they saw the MAGA hat and that made them suspicious, and they said it was also because they knew she was from Alabama, rummaged through her things, broke her privacy, and then found out that she had guns. Now the other six roommates that live with her are suggesting that she needs to move out. And they've been talking to the landlord, and the landlord is asking her to move out now as well. Now, why didn't he just evict her? Because she's not in violation of her lease, and she's not in violation of any laws. Therefore, legally, none of these people have any recourse against her. None whatsoever. Because she signed a contract, just like they did, that affords her certain rights, and as long as she does not break that contract, she cannot be evicted. And as long as she is not breaking a law, she cannot be evicted. And so these people are whining about this, despite the fact that she seems to be, by all accounts that I've read, a very responsible, lawful gun owner. In fact, let's keep in mind, where is Harvard? Harvard is in Massachusetts, so unless she's crossing state lines every day, I'm pretty sure she's in Massachusetts where her apartment is. And Massachusetts has much stricter gun control laws than the state of Alabama. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, and that seems to be the implication by this particular article, now I'm not an expert on gun laws in Massachusetts, but I would guess Massachusetts is one of the several states that has a, because of how liberal they are, that would have a lockup clause. Well, she's in compliance with even those laws, as ridiculous and overbearing as they are. She has her firearms, presumably, if this is what the law states, because they said that it was, they asserted that it was law-abiding, she has her firearms under lock and key and unloaded, which makes them even less of a threat. Not that they would be a threat anyway if they have a proper gun owner, but it makes them even less of a threat than they would be normally. And so the state of Massachusetts, even with their ridiculous gun restrictions, she's still in compliance with all of those laws as well, which is an even higher standard than it would be if she was in her home state of Alabama. So despite all this, the landlord is still asking her to move out. And then Pierney says a little bit later in the article, I ask why they didn't just call me and ask before intruding. One of the girls responded that fear took over her body and she felt compelled to search my room until she found proof. I cannot make this up. So in other words, finding out that somebody that she knew and lived with owned a Make America Great Again hat was so horrifically terrifying to this poor little snowflake that she says her body was overcome with fear and she felt that she had no choice but to search this girl's room to confirm whether or not she had something. Again, she didn't even say gun, she said she had something. Does that mean that she automatically assumed that because this girl, who she's been living with for about 3 months, happened to have a Make America Great Again hat, that this person was a psychopath or a drug user or whatever else? The level of disdain by people on the left for anyone that even supports Donald Trump. And I'm not I don't consider myself a Donald Trump supporter, at least not in the traditional sense. I didn't even vote for the guy. But this assumption on the left that if you voted for Donald Trump or support Donald Trump, that you are automatically a garbage human being. I do not understand that. And part of the reason that I say that is because when going through college myself, I lived with people who I had vehement political disagreements with. Now, I'm sure that's not coming as a surprise to anybody because everybody here knows how conservative I am, and I tend to rub people the wrong way if they happen to disagree with my political beliefs. I understand that, and that's fine. And there were some very heated discussions between me and my roommates about politics. But to my knowledge, nobody at any point ever felt unsafe. And you know what? One of the guys that lived in my duplex with me when I was in the fraternity was a card-carrying Obama supporter. Now, I'm using card-carrying in the figurative sense, but I mean, the guy loved him some Obama, loved him some Joe Biden, enthusiastically voted for him, loved talking about politics, loved redistribution of wealth, and all the other liberal talking points. And you know what else? He had two or three guns, a couple shotguns, and I think a rifle, in the duplex. Never at any point did I feel unsafe. Not once. No matter how heated the discussion got, no matter how much we disagreed, no matter how much we talked about it, I never at any point felt in danger. And to my knowledge, if I ask him today, he would probably say exactly the same thing about me. And you know what? He's not even the most liberal out of all of my roommates. There was another roommate that didn't like Obama because he didn't believe he was liberal enough. Guy was a full-on socialist Bernie supporter. Most of my fraternity brothers, because they were from the South, happened to be more conservative like me. But the point is, I can live with, even for a long extended period of time, someone who I have severe political disagreements with, and not only be okay with it, but be friends with them, have discussions with them, go out to eat with them. You can ask any of these guys. We're still friends. We keep in touch, not as much as we used to, obviously, because none of us are in college anymore. But none of these guys that I'm talking about that have these disagreements with me, we still remain friends, because that's how a mature adult handles a disagreement with somebody else. Just because you dislike somebody's politics does not mean you have to hate them, and does not mean that you can't be friendly with them and have a good time with them or live together. This idea that we can't do that and this becomes a toxic environment, I just do not understand that at all. And so this is really what it goes down to. This girl finding out that this other girl that has a Make America Great Again hat that she lived with for 3 months, finding out that she was a Trump supporter was so terrifying that she became petrified and had to search this girl's room. And the by the way, it's important to note that part of the justification for this was that the girls said that they were scared that either a intruder could come in and turn the guns on them, which I don't know how that's going to happen if the gun is under lock and key and unloaded. I mean, you would think that they could, if nothing else, call 911, or even though I doubt this would be the case, use their own guns or weapons against somebody if they discovered him in the time that this took. Or, and this was the most humorous one, they were afraid that the guns could go off on their own. Again, it becomes abundantly clear these girls are afraid of guns and have never been near one, or have no knowledge of how guns work, which is probably part of the reason that they're afraid of them. For example, let's say that you were a person that knew that cars existed but had never been around one before. Maybe you would be uncomfortable with your roommate having a car if you had never ridden in one, seen one driving down the road, never knew somebody that had a driver's license and owned a car. Imagine that, seriously. Put yourself in that world. If you were to do that, I imagine you would have kind of a fear of a car. And maybe you would even think, oh, I don't want that thing parked outside my house. I'm afraid it might run through the wall on me in the middle of the night. That's not how cars work. They have to have a key and they have to have somebody driving them. With a firearm, you have to have somebody that knows how to operate the gun. Not that it's all that terribly complicated. It's a lot easier than a car. But the gun is not going to go off on its own for the same reason a car is not just going to drive through your wall in the middle of the night unless it's been cranked up and the accelerator's been pushed. And so showing a blatant ignorance of how guns function. I've never lived in a house that didn't have guns. I've never lived in a house that didn't have several guns. And never once in my 29 years have they gone off. And all of my family owns guns, and I've never heard a story of a gun just going off while it was sitting in a room by itself. That's not the way guns work. Something has to move the firing pin in order to ignite the gun and fire the weapon. That's just how it works. So anyway, showing a blatant lack of understanding when it comes to firearms here. So now the landlord is saying that she should move out because she's causing the others stress. This is the word that he's using. He says, well, it's stressful to everybody else and they're uncomfortable with it, so this girl needs to move out. Here's my assessment of that. First of all, they claimed if the other girls move out, which they also put that option on the table, Pierney would be responsible for the $6,000 of rent alone. No. They signed a contract. They're responsible for their share of the rent. The idea that all of a sudden this girl should be on the hook for all of their rent because they left because they're the ones that are uncomfortable makes absolutely no sense. Also, let's look into this. The way that I see it, she's not the problem. They have the problem. They're the ones that are uncomfortable. They're the ones that have this irrational fear of guns. And they're the ones that are freaking out over this, even though they've been living in the house with the guns for 3 months and just didn't know it. It's kind of like that Thanksgiving episode of Friends, where Chandler claims that he's allergic to dogs because he doesn't like dogs. He's not actually allergic. He just claims that he is. So he has an excuse to not be around dogs. He's afraid of them. And then he says, well, you can't have a dog in this apartment. I'm allergic to dogs. And Phoebe goes, oh, really? Because this dog's been living here for 3 days. It's the same thing. They assume that there's something wrong with the gun or that the gun puts them in danger. They've been living in the house with the gun for 3 months and the gun owner for 3 months. And there was never any reason to suspect that she was going to harm them until all of a sudden they found out that, oh, she's a gun owner. There must be something wrong with her. Oh, and she has a Make America Great Again hat. She's probably a psychopath. There is no logic or reason that goes along with this. And so far as I can tell, this girl is the victim. She's the one that is having her privacy violated. She's the one that had her trust broken. She's the one that has these other girls berating her over doing something that is legally acceptable and in compliance with her lease. So if they're the ones with the problem, they're the ones that need to leave, and they should be the ones responsible for their own rent. Because they signed the contract, so if they've got a problem with it, that's on them, not the girl that's owning the gun. And another thing, too, keep in mind that this is happening right around finals time. So the landlord is suggesting and trying to compel this girl to leave, despite the fact that she's in the middle of finals as a graduate student at Harvard. You know how stressful it is to move? Even if you're a guy like me and moving doesn't take all that long, it still takes like 48 hours, even if you're doing it at lightning fast speed. And it's a very stressful thing to go through. Because there's so much associated with it, you're worried if you remembered everything. I don't have to explain it all to you. But, I mean, you can understand why doing that in the middle of finals for a grad student would be kind of an inconvenience at best. I mean, this could cause her to fail her finals. And through no fault of her own. Really what this all goes back to is these girls have an irrational fear of guns. Now, there is such thing as a rational fear of guns. In fact, just recently, we were teaching my sister how to shoot because she's never shot a handgun before. Shot other guns, but never a handgun. And recently, my dad got her a little bitty firearm, just something for her personal protection, not something that's big and hulking like mine, but something she can fit in her purse and everything. And so he got her a little bitty firearm. And one of the first things that I taught her is you want to, because she was nervous about it, and she's not somebody that's shot a lot before. You need to have a healthy fear of the gun. In other words, you need to be keenly aware of the fact that this is a killing device. It is a device specifically designed to hurt people or kill them. And so that does need to be the baseline. And because people have that rational fear of a gun, that's going to help keep you safe. And that's going to help impress upon you the responsibility that you have to not misuse your right to keep and bear arms. But then there is also an irrational fear of guns, to where people are more afraid of guns than they ought to be, and they're so terrified of the object of a gun that they're convinced that the object itself is evil, that it could go off on itself, or that by having a gun, that means somebody is up to no good or a bad person. That's an irrational fear of guns. And so, it's okay to have some fear of guns, but you're taking it to a ridiculous extreme to where your fear goes beyond that which is logical to have. And this is the issue that they're running into, that these girls have an irrational fear of guns. And to be honest, as somebody who is a concealed carry permit holder, I have my license and everything. As somebody that has been through this as a gun owner, I can say that I've had similar experiences. Perfect example. I'm not going to give any names because I work in radio, which means that some people that I work with are media personalities that are well known. But there was a time when I was working for a radio station that I've worked for in the past that one of the employees found out about, I don't know, 4, maybe 5 months after I'd been working there, that I had a firearm on me, and that I had a firearm on me pretty much every time they'd ever seen me. They were shocked and aghast by it, but instead of confronting me and talking to me about it and asking why I had a firearm, they went over my head and went to my boss, which irritated me to no end, which is exactly what these girls did. Well, I say this, at least these girls did confront her and then go to the landlord. They rifled through her stuff first and then confronted her, which wasn't right. But nonetheless, at least they did talk to her first before going to the landlord, at least presumably. But this person went over my head and they, they stuck up for me. And I appreciate that the company did this. But finally, I confronted them about it when I found out who it was. And I wasn't vitriolic or anything, but I said, first of all, you've known me for 4 months. 4 or 5 months at this point. I don't remember exactly because it's been a while ago now. But have you ever gotten any indication that I was unstable? Have ever been unfriendly to you? I've never gotten into an argument with anybody that I was not on the air with. So in other words, when I started there, because I'm a political pundit, I would get into political arguments, sometimes very heated political arguments, with the person that I was on air with. But this was not one of those people. It was just a staffer working in the radio station. And so, never been in an argument with the guy, never had a crossword with him, always been friendly, always talked to him, had a good relationship with this person. But all of a sudden, once they found out that I was a gun owner and I carried a gun around, then all of a sudden I was a bad guy. Then all of a sudden I was a threat for exercising my constitutional right. This is the reason that gun owners feel a little apprehensive about this, because they've had people that assume that they are bad guys or villains or criminals or whatever, just because we happen to have a gun. And this was something that was of great concern to me, and it really bothered me that this guy just assumed that I was a bad guy, even though he had known me for a while. And I assume probably a similar event took place here, because these girls have been living with this other girl for 3 months. And now all of a sudden she's a bad guy and she's a crazy person and they're afraid of her just because she happens to own a gun, which she's legally allowed to do. I do not understand that mentality. It's because they are making it about the gun, not the person. Because if you know the person, you don't have to worry about the gun. Now, if there's a guy that was living with me that was unstable and flew off the handle and would, I don't know, occasionally punch a wall or something like that and go into fits of rage, and I found out that guy has a gun, okay, then I am a little afraid. Then I think it's a rational fear, because you're not necessarily afraid of the gun per se. You're afraid of the person and that gun gives them more power than they had before. Then I understand. But see, to them, the gun is the thing to be afraid of, not this girl who, by all accounts, is not a problem. And the reason that I carry, I mean, you know what it is, because there are certain people that, because of my job, do not like me and have threatened me. I have had threats on my life multiple times because of what I do. I have a very good reason for carrying a firearm. And for those of you who remember back in the Mark Montiel days when I was on the Capitol Buzz, one of the things that he really appreciated about me is that I was armed and I knew how to use and responsibly defend myself with a firearm, because people had threatened him too. This is just something that happens in this business. And back when I was doing his show, I was getting in here at 6, which meant when I came in, it was dark and there was nobody around in the parking lot. It would not be hard for somebody who didn't like me, who knew where the building was, to come up and start firing on me if they really wanted to kill me. And there have been multiple people that have threatened to kill me. I'm not going to name any names because you would know some of them. But the point is, that has happened to me on multiple occasions. And if it happens to me in rinky-dink little, you know, in one market like this, then imagine what it's like for the national guys. And you know what? There's a similar thing that happened with this girl. Because despite all of this, and assuming some kind of ill intent or some kind of malice behind this girl, nobody decided to ask her, why does she carry?
Actually, in this case, it's not even Carrie. Why does she have a gun in the house? Why does she own firearms? In fact, if you look at this quote from the article from the girl, Layla Pierney, nobody has bothered to question, well, why do you want to have protection? Could it be because you've experienced something where you need to protect yourself as you see fit? I have a real legitimate reason as to why I want to protect myself. And that reason is that she used to be in an abusive relationship. That's what it was. The reason that she has firearms in the house and she feels that she needs to protect herself is because she used to be in an abusive relationship. So the left can crow all they want about women empowerment, and somehow that means the ability to have the government pay for birth control for them, which I've never understood, because there's nothing less empowering for a woman to have a man pay for all her stuff. But this woman, who felt threatened by a man because she was in an abusive relationship, took that control back and took that power back by owning a firearm and using her constitutionally given rights, her God-given rights, to own a firearm and to use it if necessary to defend herself. That's real women empowerment. That's really what empowering women looks like. Because that puts her at least on somewhat equal terms with anybody that would be her assailant. Because if it's left up to sheer physicality, women as a general rule are not going to be able to get a man off of them that they don't want to, unless you happen to be like Ronda Rousey or something. And based on the pictures that I've seen of this girl, that's not an apt description of her. But nonetheless, which, by the way, I'm not saying that is a cut down. It could be a compliment, depending on how you look at it. But anyway, the point in all of this is she has a real reason. Now, the reason doesn't matter because she has a right to have it. So whether she had a reason or not, she's exercising her constitutional rights. But even if you're looking at it from that angle, not only does she have the right to carry, but she also has a good reason to carry. The right would be enough, but the reason ought to strengthen her argument even more. And that's the problem. The left only thinks about how guns can be misused and does not think about how they could be used when done correctly, which is exactly what this girl is doing. She wants to have protection. She wants to be able to defend herself in that situation. Therefore, she owns guns. That is a correct use of the Second Amendment. She's not going out and robbing grocery stores or robbing gas stations or anything like that. She is just exercising her constitutional rights. And she's doing so because she has a legitimate reason for wanting to be able to protect herself on equal footing with a man. And so I just don't understand the left's mentality that every single time someone has a gun, they assume they're up to no good. They assume they're being misused. They don't think about how guns can be used correctly. And comfort may not matter when talking about rights, because, you know, just because these girls are uncomfortable is not a good reason for this girl to not be able to exercise her constitutional rights. So that argument doesn't play well at all with me or anybody that knows anything about the Constitution. But nonetheless, what about her comfort? Why does nobody ask about that? What if she were uncomfortable because she's someone who's been in an abusive relationship before? What if she feels uncomfortable without her guns? Or, you know, with somebody going through her room without her permission while she's away for the weekend? There's also that comfort, but more importantly, the comfort of her being able to sleep at night. Maybe she suffers from not being able to, because she knows that she would be helpless to defend herself against a man that wanted to have her way with her if she didn't have a firearm. Then why does her comfort not come into question? Because that's a far more legitimate fear than being afraid of your roommate that you've been with for 3 months just all of a sudden going postal and shooting you because you found out they happen to own guns and be a Trump supporter. That is a far more rational fear of somebody that you used to be in a relationship with coming after you than being afraid of a roommate that you have no reason to otherwise believe would want to do you harm. So here's my question. Because I always say, let's apply the same story to a different scenario and see how that would play out. Instead of the Second Amendment, let's take the First Amendment. Let's say that me and a bunch of my fraternity brothers were living in a rented house, which, by the way, we were when we were at Auburn. We didn't own the house. We rented the house from somebody else. Let's say that we were in that situation. And me and my 6 roommates, all of a sudden, we noticed that one of our roommates had a prayer shawl. One of those prayer mats that Muslims use when they pray to Mecca 5 times a day. And then we waited until the weekend and went through his room to find out and discovered he owned a Quran. And then the 6 of us got together and went to our landlord and said, "We're terribly uncomfortable because we're all Christians. We're terribly uncomfortable with this guy being a Muslim because Muslims are terrorists and they're bad people and they kill Christians like us. And so this guy having access to where we sleep, this guy is a danger to us and we're uncomfortable and he needs to go." And the landlord agreed with us and tried to get this guy kicked out. How do you think the left would have responded to that? Now, I'm not trying to justify that behavior, because if I go to that guy and explain that to him and they say, "Well, has he caused any problems before?" Well, no. Has he threatened you before? Not really. Has he talked about his religion before? Actually, no. In fact, we just found this out because we saw that he happened to have one of those prayer mats. How do you think the left media would have reacted to that one? Because we're still talking about a constitutional right, the right to freedom of religion. I would argue an even more important right than the Second Amendment, the only one that is more important. And so, why is there a distinction between the two? You can rest assured, if that was the case, this would be all the media was talking about for about 2 days, at least, bare minimum. This is a 48-hour news story in the national news. Yet when it's somebody's Second Amendment rights being violated, not even the Alabama news is really talking about it. At least not ad nauseum. Because when it's the Second Amendment that is under attack, we just kind of ignore that one. These women are textbook bigots. They are someone that assumes the worst in somebody because they have different beliefs than they do. So by definition, these 6 women and the landlord that's trying to get this girl kicked out of her home, they're bigots. There's no way to sugarcoat it. There is some other news, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on this one because it is pure speculation, but the facts seem to suggest, based on words from his own mouth, that our own Senator Jeff Sessions, former senator now, of course, he has contemplated running for his old Senate seat, but it does not appear as though he plans to actually go through with it. So he hinted at this the other day after George H.W. Bush's funeral, which we're also going to get to that in just a second. So Jeff Sessions hints that he will not run in 2020 in an interview with Politico, where he says, quote, "I've been clearing my brain. I think that's a fair statement. I'll go to Alabama, do some things, and then that will clarify a little more before I worry about making a statement." So he's definitely not slamming the door on it, but he did tell Politico that he doesn't know that he'd necessarily want to go back with the Senate, even if he were guaranteed the spot, which he's, of course, not. But he said that he doesn't miss the Senate. And I understand. It's a high-stress job. There's a lot of pressure that goes on to it. And, you know, we all love Jeff Sessions, but he's, what, 72 now? I mean, I'm not trying to poke fun at him because he's still incredibly bright. I thought he was doing a great job as Attorney General and hated to see him go. But nonetheless, the man is 72 years old. And so he's 70 now. Sorry, he would be 72 when he was running, and then he would be 78 when his term ended, if I'm not mistaken. Double check me on those numbers. But my point in all of that is, you can't really blame the guy for not wanting to spend all of his golden years by the time that most people are retired, and if nothing else, just kind of have a part-time gig and do their own thing and relax a little bit. You really wouldn't be able to blame somebody like Jeff Sessions that has a lifetime record of serving not only the state of Alabama, but his country. You really wouldn't blame him for saying, you know what, it's time to pack it in. I'm going to retire and enjoy my life. And he actually kind of suggests that as well. He said, quote, to Politico, "I could go back and spend some time in the woods. I've got 10 grandchildren. So what's happening now is we're seeing Jeff Sessions thinking about running for the Senate, but I mean, he's looking at his options and saying, well, I could go back to all of that mess and that nightmare and have to fight tooth and nail just to get back to that position, or I could just kind of spend some quality time with my grandkids and hang out in the woods and do my own thing. You know what? As much as I would love to see Jeff Sessions back in the Senate or back in the White House, if the guy just says, yeah, this is it for me, I'm done, I don't blame him. If that's what he wants to do, well done, Jeff Sessions, if you want to walk off into that good night, if you want to just kind of disappear from the public eye and do your own thing, you know what? You've done your time, you have served us well, and I appreciate what you've done for us. And if that's your decision, I support it. I would love to see him back in the Senate seat, but, you know, it just, I understand if that's really not what he wants to do. He said that he doesn't miss the Senate, and I understand why. So take this with a grain of salt, because he certainly didn't slam the door on it, and this doesn't guarantee that he's not going to run. But if I had to guess, based on all those factors, I believe him when he says that he's thinking about not running. Now, we'll find out soon enough, I'm sure. But when he says that he's seriously considering just packing it in, I believe him when he says that. I usually am highly, highly skeptical of people saying that they're not going to run, but this one, I kind of see the logic behind it. Now, I don't think anybody knows how much damage Trump's constant and completely unfounded attacks on him did. But I can tell you, just from my own personal experience, and this is anecdotal evidence, this isn't polling data or anything else, although there are polls that suggest this as well, and we've covered those on the show as well. But just based on anecdotal evidence, I remember when the attacks from Trump started that I had a myriad of callers, even callers that were big, big Trump supporters. I mean, MAGA supported him in the primary over everybody else, everything. They were saying, look, I love Trump, but he's going too far when it comes to Sessions. But I noticed a trend that as these attacks went on and as the Mueller investigation seemed to be more and more ridiculous, that there was this anti-Jeff Sessions sentiment that cropped up even amongst Alabamians, which I would have never thought would have happened. And I got more calls defending Trump than defending Sessions and going after me for suggesting that the president was incorrect in going after his attorney general. And so I don't think anybody really understands the breadth and the depth of damage that Donald Trump did to Jeff Sessions' good name. And because of that, and because we don't really know how much damage was done, then I think Jeff Sessions is looking at this and thinking, it would be really embarrassing to go back to my old job, which I think he kind of considers a step down from attorney general to a great degree. It would be really embarrassing for me to try to go back to my old job and lose that race, or worse, lose the primary. Because to be honest, I think no matter what happens, Doug Jones loses to just about anybody. I could run my dog against Doug Jones right now in the state of Alabama, and he would probably lose. But when it comes to, which, by the way, that's a play on the whole yellow dog Democrat thing, but nonetheless, nonetheless, I think that Jeff Sessions would probably win that. But do you know how embarrassing it would be for somebody of Jeff Sessions' stature? Not to say that he's high and mighty or too good, because he's just kind of a down-home guy, and that's one of the things I like about him. But you know how embarrassing that would be for somebody that has climbed to the highest, one of the highest places of power in the United States of America, a constitutionally recommended office serving under the president, to go back to try to get his old job as a senator and then to get beat, not in the general, but in the primary? You can understand why Jeff Sessions would be looking at that and thinking about retiring and saying, yeah, it's just too much trouble. And that would be kind of a blight on Sessions' legacy if the voters of Alabama rejected him. Now, I don't know that they necessarily would, and I don't know if I would vote for him or not. I would have to see who the other candidates running against him were, although I would not hesitate to cast my vote for him again. But nonetheless, I can kind of see where he's coming from on this. And what I really wonder is if Sessions would endorse Trump if he could do it all again. So I'm just genuinely curious, and hopefully I'll be able to ask him this one day, even though I doubt I'll get a straight answer. I would love to just pick Jeff Sessions' brain and ask him, Mr. Sessions, if you had a time machine and could go back and do it all again, would you endorse Trump? Would you go through all this heartache, all this pressure, wind up giving up your Senate seat just to be the attorney general under constant attack from your own boss, your own president? I'm genuinely curious if he would say yes, because I know he's always wanted to be attorney general. That was a dream of his. That's why he wound up getting the job. And he was incredibly loyal to Donald Trump, even through all of the attacks. and supported him and pushed his agenda and did a great job in the Attorney General. So I'm just very curious to see that if I got to pick Jeff Sessions' brain and got an honest answer out of him, if he would say, yeah, I'd reconsider that. I might endorse Trump, but I wouldn't have been part of his campaign and I wouldn't have taken the appointment of Attorney General. I wonder if he'd say that. I don't know if he would or not, but I do think it's an interesting thing to think about. But the endless personal attacks on Jeff Sessions and his character, in my opinion, is one of the worst things that was ever done in Alabama politics. So it is just really tragic that that wound up taking place. All right, so we have something else that I wanted to go to. George W. Bush gave an absolutely astounding eulogy at his dad's funeral, and there's several points from just a public speaker standpoint that I'm going to evaluate on this one, but as somebody who is a minister and has had to write eulogies before, this is kind of in my wheelhouse. I've always believed that the hallmark of a really good eulogy is when you can really feel like you know the other person after doing so. And I'm getting signals from outside. It looks like something's come up, and I'm going to have to end the show a little bit early today. But thank you so much for being with us today. Stay the course, friends.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.